That was a great response. Can everyone see the screen okay? Patty, no heckling, no heckling. Can everybody see the screen okay? Anyone got, Trish?
Trish.
I'm not seeing any issues out there. Can everyone hear okay?
I don't think your mic is on.
Oh, you gotta, really bring it, almost like.
Good thing we're out of,
I'll try to get another mic for everyone. That other one doesn't reach over here, does it?
No, but I can make it.
I didn't know if that one was easier, Sarah.
It is better.
We're just going to change out the mic real quick, so I don't have to have this thing like on my lips.
Too bright still. Can they turn it? Like, the, is it too much light on the screen?
Yeah. As far as the back, yeah.
Okay. Can everyone see the screen?
Thank you.
Is there a way to turn that one off only?
Test, test. Everyone hear me in the back?
Yep.
Yes.
Now that, and then they're saying they want this light off.
Maybe. We'll try.
Can do that.
Is someone take that one back from me?
Thanks, Adam. All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to today's forum. My name is Jamie Helen, the town administrator down here next to me. We'll get up and take some questions. Superintendent of Schools, Lucas Jaguar. Many folks may have seen some of this, but I just wanted to open up with a couple of slides. I am not going to do the whole presentation. It would take too much time, but I hope to go through about 10 or 15 minutes of some of the specifics so that folks can get a little comfortable, just to get the conversation started. And then we're going to take probably a good hour plus of questions and comments and allow all of you to engage with both myself and Lucas. So, as everybody knows, there is an override, or hopefully everybody knows, there's an override question on the ballot next Tuesday. And I did want to recognize our town clerk, Nancy Dinello. Nancy, raise your hand. Nancy has come here to answer any questions too. We brought her in just in case anyone had any questions about the voting place or any of the other details around voting. So the first slide, this slideshow was given on May 1st before the town council. Many of you may have read it, but just for those of you who aren't aware, there is an override on the ballot next Tuesday, June 11th. Early voting has already started. And I believe Nancy confirmed today about 3,500 folks or so. 3,753. 100 voters have already entered in their ballots. The registration deadline has passed, but there'll be an in-person voting this Tuesday at the high school. But usually most people care about this slide. How much is it going to cost me? And based on the single family tax rate value in town right now, some of you may be in shock at this, but the average single family median house in Franklin is just over $650,000. So if you bought your house here 30 years ago, congratulations, I wish I did too. But the tax rate is $11.79. The average bill, tax bill in town is $7,667. There is a link, and I know the Senior Center has provided it too, and it's on the town website for anyone to go in, and you can plug in your own numbers with your housing value if it's less or more. There's also copies of a frequently asked questions that we've put out that I know Sarah has for folks, and you can also find that on the website. Our staff went through and did some pre-calculations based on a home of $650,000, $600,000, $500,000, $400,000, $700,000, $800,000, a million. We put a chart in there to try to give people at least, if they didn't want to go on the calculator themselves, we put a chart in there where people could, you know, take at least the best guess of exactly what, how much they would pay and based on their home value if they didn't want to go to the website of DOR and put all the numbers in. So. If you go to franklinma.gov, which is on the first slide, there's a town budget page. You can't miss it. There's a link in a red bar right on the top that says override information here. You just click on that and all the resources, including this presentation, are on there. So as a result of that model, which is what most towns do, and what we do is we do the average numbers so you can kind of gauge what this would cost for you based on this. But the override on Tuesday, if approved, would be a $552.82 cost of a tax increase on your tax bill for FY25. One of the most frequent questions I get all the time is, why aren't you putting out FY25 numbers? I can't. And the reason why I can't is because by state law, the town council has to have a tax rate hearing every year, and there's a certain window of time in which they can do it, and it's in November and early December. Every year we do it, usually right the week right after Thanksgiving. And the Board of Assessors, who are elected officials in your community, have not set what the valuation of property is in town, and they also recommend the tax rate to the council each year. So I understand that that's very difficult for a lot of folks because you want to know what your taxes may be in FY25, and then that $552 will be added on top of that. To illustrate that point in other materials that I won't go through, the average tax bill in FY24, this year currently, went up $198 on average across the town, okay? So you can kind of get an idea of what that tax bill might be next year. So on this valuation here, you might see an increase of about $750 on your taxes when you include both the override amount as well as the usual 2.5%, prop 2.5% that the town has done every year for probably three decades. What we have proposed, also online, and I know there's copies here, is a memorandum of understanding, which I'll talk about again really quickly in a minute. But the allotment schedule is as follows. Is the recommendation is $6.3 million, if approved, of that money would go towards account 300. It's a very important distinction. But account 300, which is Franklin Public Schools, okay? The additional $500,000 would go to public property and buildings, which is more commonly known as facilities. And so that allocation would be in effect for FY25. FY26, the proposal is to make that a 60-40 split. And the reason why that's important is because there are a lot of stakeholders in the communities, and Councilor Pellegrini up front and many other councils have heard from other departments through the years, particularly on capital appropriations for fire and police. Every year, the town on a one-time basis each year buys the equipment for our firefighters and our police officers, and those items are actually not in the annual budget, okay? Now, we find the money to do it each year, okay? But that is an example of some other issues that the council and other members of the community, non-school related stakeholders, have heard year after year after year. But we also understand that a majority of the need is for the schools. And so we've come up with a system to bring financial solvency and sustainability to both the public schools, but also be able to invest in some of those other areas that have been talked about for many years, like public infrastructure. I get requests, I'm sure many of you have requested this before. We get requests for sidewalk maintenance every day. We get requests for road repairs every day. We get requests from the fire and police each year to fund what's called their public safety turnout gear each year. And so also there are variables in the budget that I don't know the cost. We're up for collective bargaining next year with all the teachers, the police, fire, librarians, custodians, public works employees, trades and maintenance, and our librarians. Everybody's up on a collective bargaining schedule year. We don't know those costs yet. Employee health care costs in FY26, we also don't know those costs yet. We've got estimates and ideas, but those numbers can change very, very dramatically. Those numbers can change also dramatically for the public schools. And so in recognizing this, I wanted to make sure there was a fair split to both send a signal to the schools that this 60% can continue to bring them solvency and sustainability for the long term for what we need for the educational needs for the community, but also be able to make some of those commitments in FY26, which for me is like 10 years away, by the way. Okay, you know, it's a year plus away before we get to that budget process. So before we get to FY26, we want to make sure we have a little bit of flexibility, and we want to be transparent about that to folks in the community. So that's why that split is there, and I'm going to talk about it again here a little bit more. So a lot of questions come through in the pledge. No one's going to be able to read this. I'm just going to go through the quick highlights. So this really sets out one section I wanted to highlight on here is section 4. We've heard a lot, I know the council has heard a lot of feedback from people in this community over the years. Franklin doesn't do overrides. Well, that option probably isn't on the table anymore. We're going to make our school district solvent and sustainable. But we've also heard from countless amounts of residents in town that they are very nervous about the cost impact to their budgets, not just those who are on necessarily fixed incomes, but those who are in the community that aren't even seniors necessarily or retired, who are also living paycheck to paycheck. And so one of the comments to all the public hearings that came out was, can you guys give us some sort of scope into the future of where these cost increases are gonna come from? You know, we've had unfunded mandates from the state. We've had a lot of other challenges in the post-pandemic world. And the town of Norwood and other towns make commitments like this to try to give some surety to the public that just because there's an override on the ballot this year in a town that doesn't do overrides, and by the way, one out of 11 overrides has passed in Franklin's history. So it is something where Franklin has not always done overrides like the Belmonts of the world that do them seemingly every several years. It was very important to the town council and many people that there was at least some provision in the MOU that tried to give surety to everybody in the community. And as many people may have seen on some of the presentations I've given, there have been a lot of unfunded mandates from the federal government, namely stormwater. These weren't choices that I wanted to make. It wasn't something I wanted to be a town administrator and decided I wanted to be the stormwater guy. These are just sometimes the things that happen when you get into the chair and you have to find out solutions for them. But the anxiety with inflation, the anxiety post-pandemic, and the paycheck-to-paycheck lifestyle that many Franklinites go for, it was really important to many members of our body that at least there was some mechanism in there for the community to say, hey, you know, we're not coming back every year on this. So in the MOU, there is a 5-year moratorium, if you will, on bringing any more overrides back, and basically saying to the community, we need to do this now for the public schools. They're in dire straits financially. We need to do this. But moving forward, we are, as a community, are committing to people to live within budgeted revenues, and that we are not going to continue to ask for an override every year, every 2 years, or every 3 years, or whatever, if the override is approved. So section 4 in there basically puts a moratorium in there from FY26 to FY30. People can look at this sheet really quick. Some folks may have some questions on this from the superintendent, but this is basically a breakdown of exactly the amount of money that the school district is seeking of $6.3 million increase. As you can see up here, and I can speak to this on the town side too, healthcare is something that is just, we all know the healthcare system generally in America is pretty expensive, it's pretty broken in a lot of ways, and we live in the highest cost health insurance state in the country by far. We also have the best healthcare system, but we pay for it in Massachusetts. Transportation, mental health support, about $500,000. Out-of-state district tuition, which is generally for special education students, at $2.2 million. Specialized transportation, $288,000. And maintaining staffing levels, I know the superintendent will talk about this in a minute, at current levels. This is probably one of the areas that's most in need and one that's most passionate, really for everybody in the community, not just school-age parents. Keeping class sizes to a recommended amount of that 20 to 23 students, depends on whether it's elementary, middle, or high school, is probably the most important thing, or one of the most important features when determining educational outcomes. So they're seeking $2.1 million to maintain staffing levels at current levels, in addition to additional funding for K-5 class size at $375,000. and then some restoration of programs that had been cut this year that were near and dear that the council and the school committee and everybody heard, quite frankly, from a lot of kids who came to the public meetings this year. $110,000 to restore those programs. If folks have questions in a moment from the superintendent, we can dig into that a little deeper. So one of the questions that people also ask me all the time is about the 40%. I understand the confusion about this, and I understand the sensitivity to it. But as I mentioned a minute ago, there are a lot of stakeholders in this community that have had a lot of priorities before the town council for years. And because of the costs, and some of them are unanticipated, we want to give surety to the school district in the exact amount they'll need, the $4.1 million each year, and the 60%, but of the 40%, there's a very specific provision in there that allows that 40% to be discretionary through the annual budgeting process over the next 4 or 5 years. And it's really limited to collective bargaining, reoccurring capital costs, which I mentioned a moment ago, is really about fire and police and some of the issues that they've had getting their infrastructure funded. It leaves open for some investments to public infrastructure. We just talked about healthcare. And also special education and school technology. The one additional issue in there that I would speak to is the remodeling of Remington Jefferson School. For those of you who know Rem Jeff well, it's just hit its 30th anniversary, and we need the school to stay in tip-top shape for at least another 30 years. The council just authorized the borrowing we haven't spent any of the money yet, just so folks know, but we just authorized the borrowing at a recent meeting. At some point, Remington Jefferson needs to get remodeled. We have a new roof that's needed, fire alarms, the playground, a whole series of things up at RJ. In addition to the Horace Mann roof needs to be replaced, or at least structurally solidified. And so that borrowing authorization went through as well. Of that 40%, that's not in account 300's budget. It's not in the school budget. Okay, but it's in the municipal side of the budget because we run facilities, but those projects would be under that 40% cap. So even though that 40% cap or that 40% number, some have said, oh, well, you know, we don't know where it's gonna go. You know, what's Jamie doing with that? Why does he give the schools every penny? Well, that's a school item that's in, just happens to be in my side of the budget. And so you have to have that split and that ratio in the foreseeable future to be able to pay for those costs. I would be remiss if I didn't note, for those of you also, Lucas is able to answer any questions about the redistricting, but I did put a slide up here in the presentation. The override, as well as the school committee looking at their fee structure, which was sorely needed, after many years. Also, the redistricting plan is a part of a global plan to be able to make sure that the town budget and the school budget are solvent and sustainable for the long term. This is my 9th year in Franklin. Sometimes it feels like my 2nd, sometimes it feels like my 20th. But this is my 9th year in Franklin, and you know, Jeff, many of you know Jeff Dunning, my predecessor. We've been talking about school finance for many, many years. We've been talking about declining enrollment since 2008. And I can't emphasize enough how much credit I truly give the school committee and Lucas and Bob Dutch and the entire school community. As all of you probably are aware, we've had some very tough conversations on these things over the years. And I truly mean it, that I give them a tremendous amount of credit for putting those plans together in such a short time frame. Folks, this was something for a lot of people that seemed to come out of nowhere, and I respect and understand that, maybe not in this room. But for us that have been leaders in this community, like Council Pellegrini and many more, we've been talking about this for years, well over a decade. And so this is not a shock. However, the expense cuts in their budget that will be able to help bring them to solvency is really important. We can all talk about what happened 20 years ago and how we're going to restore things, but the truth of the matter is that we're here today. We have kids that are going to enroll in school this September, and those parents and those families and those grandparents are looking for what that means in September to their kid today and next year, and the year after, and the year after, and the year after that. So all of these issues that are before us are not made in complete exclusion. They're made because my office abuts the superintendent's office. His office is next to mine. We see each other in the halls, in the cafeteria, in the parking lot, sometimes occasionally in the restroom. We see each other in meetings. We see each other all the time, and we talk about what each other's doing all the time. And it's incredibly important to note that the override and the redistricting and all of the other policy decisions the council and the school committee are making, we're all making the best decisions we possibly can to try to make sure that the educational quality that exists today and next September and into the future are there for the kiddos that are in our community now and that are going to be here tomorrow and next year and so forth. So I just want everybody to know these things are not necessarily mutually exclusive. One without the other presents a different set of policy challenges, but when you wrap them all up and you do them all together, it really will bring the town of Franklin's budget into a sustainable way. Now, I also mention that by saying we can't just continue to spend at the rate the town is spending. I've said that publicly numerous times. The school committee knows this. The council knows this. The superintendent knows this. The school business administration knows this. We have to get to a place where we have to all realize as a community we are not going to be able to do it all forever. And that at some point we have to be able, as the pandemic kind of is well in the rearview mirror, we have to make sure that spending in the future is strategic. And most importantly, from my standpoint, that spending in the future is within budgeted revenues. So if we want something new, that's wonderful. We have to find the revenue to do that project. If we want a program at the schools, we have to find the revenue source for that program. We have to be able to and I don't always like to say this term, but we have to begin to live within our means as a community with the amount of money that we have. That I appreciate. So all right, so live within our means. You know, I'm just gonna say it over and over again, maybe I'll get more applause. But you know, I appreciate that. But in all sincerity, with after the pandemic and all the federal stimulus money that has come in and out, we have to moderate our expectations within the community of what we can afford and what it's gonna take to pay it. It's a really, really important thing, I both to the council and myself. So, one point you maybe can't see, but I'm gonna speak to it, and this will be my last point. A lot of folks are asking myself and the superintendent to crunch numbers, put out models, speculate, assume things. Because we spoke of it earlier today, there was a lesser known bullet point down here at the last presentation we gave, which said summer, fall 2024, the school and town administrations will begin to collaborate on FY26 forecasts, much more specifics. And what that was intended to do, there are a lot of things changing, and we understand for a lot of people in the community, they're changing very quickly, and for many, they're changing too quickly. But there's also a lot of people in the community pressing us to do more, faster, quicker, okay? But for us as administrators, putting numbers out into the public can be a risky item. And there's been so many decisions on the pallet before the school committee and the council. Us as the administration have talked numerous times about putting out speculative assumptions and numbers. Once the redistricting was out and finalized and the fees and a variety of other policy decisions by the council, as well as the FY25 budget, in addition to the override, we as staff at the top have committed to working throughout the summer. After all these decisions are made by voters or the council or school committee, we are gonna go reconvene and really look at the modern day economics of what we're dealing with post, you know, in the middle of inflation still, but also post pandemic, without federal stimulus money, and with all those dynamics changing, to spend the summer and early fall to really cost out FY26, 27, 28, 29, and 30 through the rest of the decade. There may be some questions that people ask today or in the future that I may not be able to answer, or that Lucas and Bob may not be able to answer. Because when we put a number out there, people grab onto it, they hold you to it, and they say, you told us then, and I understand that, but life changes every day. And we don't want to put numbers out to the community that we can't end up backing up for the long term. There has been so much change and so much uncertainty that we just feel it's very, very important to make sure we're doing the right diligence to do that time. That's the end of, I just skimmed through. The slideshow again is available. I just wanted to give a little bit of an overview of what the money's going towards, what some of the details on the override were, and I'll just pass it over to Lucas really quickly in case he has any comments that he'd like to make about some of the slides.
Jamie, you're gonna open up for questions after
yeah.
we're all done.
Oh yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lucas Jagir. I'm the superintendent of Franklin Public Schools. I look around the crowd, I see some folks that I know, and for those that don't know me, it's nice to meet you. I'm not only the superintendent, I'm also a resident of Franklin, taxpayer. My kids are in the Franklin Public Schools. I have a daughter at Horace Mann at the middle school. I have a son at the high school. I've been involved, I'm looking around, I see some familiar faces from the veterans, United States Marine, but also I participate with the veterans music program here, and my son has actually been volunteering at night doing the guitar thing on Tuesday nights. So I say all that as someone who's up here with some empathy around the impacts that an override has, and I'm not here to tell anyone how to vote or what to vote, but just to get in front of you. I've been looking forward to this moment, as nerve-wracking as it is to come into a room full of folks with opposing views on this. I think we owe it to you to get in front of you and answer as many questions as we can. And as someone who is raising children here, we've put together a budget that we've advocated for because we want to make sure that we're providing the same level and quality of education and what it costs to do that that we have for previous generations that have come through Franklin Public Schools. And during that time, I've also worked in Franklin since 2002. I started as a teacher and then worked through assistant principal at middle school, assistant principal at the high school, and then assistant superintendent. I'm really committed. I moved here after getting hired here because I love the town and I love the support and I love just everything that we have within this community. So I'm here advocating for the schools and for our school department. And what I would just mention, and I want to open it up to Q&A, is just around the idea of what we've proposed is really $6.5 million is just in costs that we've seen. And Jamie, you highlighted that really well. To operate at the same level and quality we have today to carry that forward to tomorrow. Unfortunately, we've been in the situation where we've had to look at the total budget. I appreciate and would agree that the means are set correctly living within it. The attempt at Tuesday is to try to do some course calibration and correction for us as a community to keep up with those means and then live within. And I say that to you with all sincerity. I'll bump into all of you along the way at the farmer's market or wherever else we are. And it's our commitment to try to just provide the level of service, have the appropriate caseloads, class sizes, and supports that we need for kids. One thing that we didn't show, but in the presentations, if you go online to the Franklin Public Schools, our budget we've presented, you've probably seen it on TV along the way, is really trying to look at and illustrate what it costs to educate kids today, and looking at the number of teachers we need. I appreciated your comments around class size and that being one of the major drivers, but also looking at special education, counseling staff that we have within our buildings. There are pieces of the puzzle that even when I was in school didn't exist to the degree they do now. Nurses, healthcare professionals, depending on the needs of kids. And we've worked really hard to create in-district programming to try to educate kids within the community in our schools while not having to pay to send them to a school outside of town, which typically comes at a much higher cost, and then we have to pay to transport them. So in-district transportation means we're paying our own van drivers to drive, pick students up and bring them to our schools. And when we can create programs in the school, we had a slide, you'll see it's a special education slide, where it talked about us quantifying what it would cost to educate four of our programs if the students were outside of our district, and it would exceed $3 million just in that. But by educating within, we're able to provide, morally, having students who live within our community attend our schools, but also there's a cost savings to that as well. So I would just say that we're open and welcoming any questions that we can answer today. We're really trying to put forth a budget that helps us sustain what we're doing, but not only that, it's preserving the great things that we do have. Friday, we're planning to notify our teachers, in order to meet our budget that was approved and appropriated, we have a series of folks who are gonna get letters that say, we're not going to be able to afford to keep you. And I think the impacts of that not only raise your class sizes, but also eliminate programs that exist. We've already lost middle school after-school clubs, if you recall. Some of the world languages we lost in previous years in elementary. I think there's creep factors to all this, meaning they start to erode into the higher grades, and we're seeing that in a variety of areas. So not only academics, cuts just across each of our areas. So we're trying to avoid that. That was the advocacy, and we're trying to just do the best we can to provide the quality of service that we've all either experienced or come to experience or expect from Franklin Public Schools. So thank you for having us today. And I just wanted to introduce one person. This is Dr. Bob Dutch. He is our school business administrator who has been on board with us this year to help develop the budget, work very closely with Jamie and me and our team to put this all together. So thank you very much. All right.
Questions?
Yeah, I'm Jim Lane.
I remember you.
Hi, Lucas.
Thank you for your service.
It was nice to see you at Parmenter. We've been in the town since 1977. Our three sons are educated. Oh, excuse me.
How did they not hear you, Jim?
I don't know, Jamie. I don't know. I'm not used to this. I'm Jim Lane. I've lived in town. My wife, Marnie, who a lot of people know, she's the better half right now. And we've had three sons who are up to 50 years old now, and they all educated at Franklin High School. And they played a lot of sports here as well as co-captains. And they're having a good life. But I do have some, I've been saving five questions from the meetings that y'all have had. So I'll be quick. Teachers, Jamie, you showed a scale. You showed a video, a screen on teachers. It was in the very beginning. And so I have a question. Regarding staffing at current levels, what does that really mean? Does that mean out of the X amount of teachers you have, you're going to cut 10%? What does this mean?
I probably should speak into the microphone. So basically, the 2.1 million is current staffing levels. There was a slide that talked about preserving what we have. Right now, we're able to offer, I don't mean to speak to you.
No, go ahead.
Other people have
I want you to tell me.
That includes the courses we have at the high school. Right now, we've gone through the exercise of getting a list of what we're not going to be running. If an override fails, we're planning for two paths, which is the responsible thing to do, right? A pass or a fail. But eliminating a lot of the elective or non-required coursework at a high school. So you need to take 4 years of English, just like we always had. But you know, other classes like a computer science class or some of the upper level advanced placement classes, things like that, those are always electives. You know, we always, music, arts, they're typically folks who come out and advocate, because when we think about what we need to do, if I was frozen on a mountain, the first thing that's gonna go is my extremities. I gotta keep the core warm, right? So we start to think about that as your core classes you need to take. So that includes a lot of the other coursework that we have happening at the middle and at the high school. And then this was the class size to try to bring our numbers. Right now we have kindergarten classes, there's a few at 24, and we're trying to get them back to that 18 to 22 range where you want your kindergartens to be. And then when you hit third grade through 12th grade, it moves to 20 to 24 students.
So Lucas, one of the meetings that I attended with you guys, you had about 400 people there a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And the big number about teachers at that meeting was, if you didn't have an override at all, the number was to cut 46 teachers. So my point here is to have you let us know at this point on this new override program, if we approve this, how many teachers are we going to lose?
So what we did, right now with the override, it's 46, roughly, approximately. We're still working out the numbers on the total number, but it's about that. And that's what it's been, that's what we've been communicating in a failed override. Is that what you're asking me?
So now if we approve the override, how many of those 46 teachers are gonna actually be cut?
No, we would
zero.
No, zero. Zero. The answer is zero. We would, because what we did 2 weeks ago is what we do every year.
We go through the budget and we look at the enrollment and we determine enrollment-based cuts that we need to make because we don't, or programming that's not going to run because students didn't request a certain course, right?
Okay.
So we had approximately nine of those last week.
I believe you.
That are separate of this, and we separated them on purpose because those are just ones you do fiscally every year.
But if the override passes,
it would be zero of the 46.
Zero, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
A couple other questions, police department.
Yeah.
The rumor is, and has been, about replacing the Palmerger School with a new police station. Is that true?
Yes, the that is in the MOU, and there's a few reasons for that. One, for those of, there will be tours of the current police station, by the way. Some people look at the outside of it and go, it looks like it was built 5 years ago, but when you go inside, it looks like it was built 70 years ago. We desperately need a new police station. We've just hired an OPM, which is a project manager required by law to begin to design it. And the real key feature is when you build a police station, there's two things. You can't just go find a piece of land on Upper Prospect Street and just say, we're gonna put it there because that piece of land was large enough and available. You need police stations to be within a certain proximity of a certain amount of residents and also within the highway. So the Parmenter site, which is actually 21 acres, aside from the school, is actually a really good site for that. What's really critical from my standpoint is, from a budgetary perspective, if the town has to go out and buy a 5 or 6 acre parcel, strategically located, that could cost us well about $10 million. So I'm gonna have to go borrow that money, pay interest on it for 20 years, and that will basically throw off our entire model. So due to the declining enrollment at the school district, which has seen about 1,800 or 1,900 students over the last 16 years, the redistricting plan, which the town council and many have been advocating for a long time, at least myself and Jeff, the Parmenter site would work out very, very well for a police station.
Thank you. A couple last questions. On the tax rate increase, if we approve the tax override of $6.8 million total, the tax rate you're saying would increase about $500 a family?
So for per household per year.
Yeah.
So it's on a $650,000 home.
Right.
At the current tax rate next year, you'd be paying $552 more than what the FY25 tax rate will be, and that will be set in December at a town council meeting.
So an increase of $1,500.
No, it would be
preposterous, right?
Yes, the $1,500. Yeah, that unless you're in like a $6 million home or something.
Migration. When I attended the meeting a while ago, and I attended different discussion meetings, the cost of bringing students or migrant families to Franklin is immense. Matter of fact, the governor, I think last night, said the state is running out of money. We don't have any more. So, Jamie, what is really the plan for Franklin? I know a little bit about it, but you know, if we continue to do this, it's gonna run into a lot of issues.
So that's a great question. So I'm not gonna do the blame game thing. So at the end of the day, I'm gonna do a little bit of it. So at the end of the day, folks truly have to think of these as mutually, completely exclusive issues. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the governor, legislature, whoever, has been appropriating money towards the emergency shelter crisis, okay? Not a single dollar, not a dollar from the municipal budget or the school budget has been spent on this issue. This is really important for people to know. The state legislature passed a law earlier this year making a full commitment to pay for the educational costs associated with the migrant children who may be in a school district. To date, the school district has been compensated $585,000 up till date, and I do expect that by the end of June, we will get additional revenue from the state on this issue. They had to go through their own process to like appropriate the money. But it is very important because I get calls now, the last 2 days I've gotten 30 phone calls and emails from people about this issue. And I know that the Norfolk thing is probably drumming up some of the comments and just what's on the news with the president and stuff like that. It's important to know that the town of Franklin had no say in this, okay? And number two, it's also important to know, other than maybe some of my staff time and Amy's and the Board of Health and maybe some of our staff collaborating and coordinating with the hotel manager, there has not been any money. We're not paying for people's benefits. We're not paying for cars. We're not paying for transportation. The town of Franklin is not paying for any of this out of your property tax dollars, okay? So the state of Massachusetts is paying that whole bill. If all of you, if somebody has an opinion on that, I fully, fully respect it. But Lucas and myself, we are not the ones to take on that commentary. Representative Roy and Senator Rausch are your representatives in the State House. They need to hear from you on your opinion, pro or against. But it's very important for this topic for people to understand. These two issues are not related to each other. We've put a list up here, right on the screen, of where the override money for $6.3 million would go for the school district, okay? That's for the kids that live in Franklin, and however the state is gonna fund educational services for schools is really being defined by the state. It's not by being defined by the local school committee, the local town council, the superintendent, or myself. And I'm glad for that question, Jim. I appreciate it. Lucas just wants to say
just
something.
Just real quick, yeah. just to also say, the money that we've received, you know, sometimes when you have an operating budget, you spend by the end of the fiscal year. The state has provided that money. We have that to sustain future. If the well shuts off at any point, we've been fiscally responsible with how much we've spent this year to cover the costs of the students who are enrolled from the hotel, and the money can only be used for the direct benefit of those students. But we didn't have to spend it all by June 1st, if that makes sense. So what we've been able to do, and Dr. Dutch, please feel free to chime in, is look to continue to have that money to sustain the future while still they are saying at the state that they're looking to add additional. But I just wanted to let people know we don't have to zero that down by June 30th. Any money that we have can be used for the direct benefit of those students moving forward, and that's how we're trying to be as to create more sustainability and judicious.
And the last thing about that migration is we intended the Palmer Veterans Celebration. Lucas, you were there,
yes.
I was there, and it dawned on me, and I confirmed it that day. A lot of the migrant students in Franklin go to Palmer. And it's kind of sad if you're going to close Palmer and put a new police station there. What are you going to do?
I would want to correct that. I think, we have students from the hotel specifically that go to a different elementary school, the majority. But there are students who we have within the district, but we've enrolled students in one of our other elementary schools. Just to be clear with the crowd.
And the last thing, lot of input that I've heard over the last 2 months was about trust.
Yeah.
You know, I've done in corporations these presentations too, but the trust of people trusting you. You know, the counselors, Deb's here today, And the same thing, to trust them and to make sure the process is going. Sometimes I feel you get picked on. Sometimes I think hopefully nobody's full of BS.
Yep.
But we gotta trust you.
Yep.
This is a lot of money.
Yep.
And it's gonna be a lot of money for a lot of people here. So the trust, as opposed to the stuff, is really important. Thank you.
Well said, Jim. Sarah.
Can I try it without the microphone? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My mother always used to say, I can hear you, don't need to talk so loudly. And then I found jobs where it came in handy. My name is Jean Holland. I'm a carpetbagger. I've only lived in town for 40 years. And I've had no kids in the schools. I have, I think, three questions, part of which you have answered already, which is the school that you're vacating, what will happen to those. Okay. Are these slides going to be available online?
They're current, they're on the, if you go to franklinma.gov and go to the override site, it's right there, okay. All those materials are up.
Why are we sending kids to other districts for Is it special ed or?
That's a great question. It's special education. It's all special ed. So when a student.
It's about a third of your budget up here.
Right. So when students have developmental disabilities, cognitive disabilities, they are put on an individual education plan. And then from there, the plan determines what types of services students need. There are some services that we don't provide in Franklin because we don't have the program. It would either cost more to run a program for one student in the school or pay the tuition to send them to a special school. For example, we have students who attend School for the Blind, for example. We don't have a program within Franklin that could sustain and run that type of program, so we are obligated to have students go to the most appropriate place for their education. What we've done over time is learned that, wait a minute, we have three students with very similar areas to of need, and can we start to think about if rather than send three students out and transport them to a school outside, is there a way we could develop that program within our system and then hire a teacher who's trained or train them to educate students, pay one teacher's salary with the in-district van service that we have, and then start to build programming within. So there's in that same slide deck, if you look online, you can see a slide deck that shows four of our programs that are our most intensive that we offer, where we did the cost of if these 20 kids had to go outside and get this education, it would cost. And one last point I'd make is we're also looking through the redistricting effort and consolidation, we're looking to have partner programs that exist at the elementary schools, the two elementaries, for example, and the one middle, where we create opportunities for students. I got a call probably 4 months ago from a neighboring district that said, hey, we're a very small town. We can't afford to send this student. It's going to cripple our budget to send this student out to a special program, but we heard you have a program. And I said, yes, we do, except I have one teacher right now, and I have an ESP in there managing 10 students, right? And I can't, I have no room right now to accept someone in this. But what we've thought about is how could we create programming with seats where we could tuition in students to start to cover the cost of the teacher. That's only done when you have a stable, kind of balanced, stabilized budget to do it. But that's an area, we have a student who left us, who was our student, went to a neighboring district, moved with their family. They called and said, hey, the student's already being educated there. They moved to our town. We don't have that program. We didn't expect this. Is there anything we can work out? And what we did is now we're tuitioning that town for a portion, the amount to educate that kid in our district. So there are ways in which we're trying to kind of build out and create our own sustainability, generate revenue. We talked a little bit about that at the meeting, but there are opportunities there. So I just wanted to give you the full answer in case you had a follow-up.
That was my second question for that.
Okay, good.
Are we bringing in any students for programs that we have?
Good question.
And secondly, is there a possibility of looking at some local towns, Rentham, Norfolk, Medway, Bellingham, and pooling resources so that you each share the cost of a teacher and the other expenses?
So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Just to follow up on Lucas and to go a little deeper into your original question. So the revenue that's producing, just so that you have some dollars attached to that, is $45,000 for that student for the balance of this year. So when you think of the cost of a teacher and the number of students that we have in there, it's paying for about half of the teacher's salary just for that one student for half a year. So you can see where the benefit would be to continue to add programs that you could tuition students in. The other point I want to mention is that you had mentioned it's about half, or I think you said a third of the increase. It's a third of the increase, but just so that you have some numbers, our out-of-district expenses represent 8 to 10% of our total budget. So, and those are students who have to go out of district until we get programming in district. Lucas, I'll let you answer the question about collaborating with other communities to share some costs.
We are, that system exists. We are one of the few communities that, we're part of two collaboratives. They're called collaboratives, and that's what I think you're asking. So it's a group of communities that come together. I'm on the board of directors as voted by the school committee to be a part of the two collaboratives. One is called Accept, and one is called BICO, Bi-County Collaborative. So I'm in both. I see different groups of superintendents from different models, but we attend both so that we can cost compare and figure out what's the best program, what's the most affordable, what makes the most sense, and we're a part of both. One is out of Natick, and one is out of Franklin, actually. Their main office is in Franklin, but they have sites at different schools. They all rent space. We also have rented space to one of our collaboratives, one of our classrooms, to try to help with that. So when you're a part of the collaboratives, you get a discounted rate as a member versus non-member, and send students that you otherwise couldn't educate within your schools. That's good questions.
Think, Al?
Oh. I didn't have a question, but maybe a comment. I was led to believe that you may close the Parmenter school, and if it closes, it would revert to the Parmenter family. So if the police station goes in there, then it would be beneficial, and that might save money.
That's correct.
Could you explain
and just
that?
One more quick thing, too, just on the police station. So. Or the Parmenter site. The Parmenter site is almost 21 acres. There's a little bit of wetlands on the far, far side of it. The really big reason is we have a couple reasons. One, we have far outgrown the police station. We've hired 6 female officers in the last 7 years, and they don't even have a locker room. They're basically in a closet. Again, when there's public tours, everybody will be able to go through it. We won't bring you to the jail cells, but the police station is desperately needed for many, many reasons, and we're looking at building a police station that will outlast all of us, and certainly myself and everybody else. The big piece of it is we don't have the money to buy a piece of land and don't have property to build it on, and you need a minimum of 5 acres at strategically located parcel of land in order to have adequate response. So the other thing we've committed to this process, it's in the MOU, is with the redistricting analysis, it looks like potentially student enrollment may come back in the new decade, okay? So what we're gonna do as part of the site work with the actual Parmenter school is we're gonna survey the rest of the land and get testing done as part of the police station. So that if the schools need a site for a future school, or if there's another ball field that's needed, or some other school or municipal purpose, that additional probably 14 acres of Parmenter will be available for the community again in the future, so that the town, if you come up with another idea in the future, you don't have to go buy a piece of land. If anyone's noticed, I don't know anybody that's lived here for 20, 30, 40, or 50 years, it doesn't look like it did 50 years ago. And quite frankly, most of the town is fairly built out. There's not a lot of parcels of land left that are in the near area of the community in the middle. And again, I used Prospect Street as an example because it's out in the middle of nowhere, okay? There's nothing you can build on Prospect Street. There's a couple of pieces of land on Prospect Street that are 10 acres, but those are never gonna suit any municipal or school need. Like, it's just out there. If you really look in the core 60 or 70% of the core center of the community, which is where most things happen, where you would want a school or you'd want whatever municipal purpose, you know, that's really probably one of the primest sites, and it would save us probably $10 million from I'm sure everybody in the room can guess. When every landowner knows that the town is looking for 5 or 6 acres, what do you think happens with the price? Go down?
No.
Right. It goes up. And usually it goes up to a point that is insurmountable or cost ineffective, or I've got to get into a hasty battle over threatening eminent domain or something of that sort. Nobody wants that. We don't want those situations in town. We've avoided them before. But again, working in collaboration with the school department and school committee, you know, they agreed to at least that provision and saying, you know, this is going to be the betterment for everybody, that if the town doesn't have to buy a $10 million piece of land and pay interest on it, that's going to leave more money in the operating budget for town and schools.
So, well,
Sarah?
How how will you pay for the improvements to make that police station? Will that be in debt exclusion or more taxes?
Yeah, it will be a debt exclusion. We've talked about this. I'm anticipating still at least 2 to 4 years away. We haven't even designed the building. And somebody asked at some public meetings recently, could you just tell us what else is coming, which was part of what went into the MOU, okay? There's some other provisions in there, if you read it, regarding some of the unfunded mandate issues from the federal and state government over PFAS that we have to do. And then at some point, like I argued on April 24th at the high school and on May 1st, you know, at some point we have to start coming back down to earth and recognizing that we're costing a lot of money to people and we may be placing people out of Franklin, which we don't want to do. But it would be a debt exclusion. We don't know the price. I don't want to even estimate anymore because costs with inflation have gone bananas. We're probably at least 2 years away. We haven't even started designing the building. There's a police station building committee, by the way. They'll be meeting over the summer. We've just selected a consultant to lead the project. And we expect in the fall of this year, we're gonna start having a lot more public engagement around the design and what people want to see in a police station. You know, what our goal is to blend it into the community. Just so you know, sirens don't usually go off at police stations because police cars, unlike fire trucks, are out in the field. They're stationed throughout town. And so the noise impact, and we want that building to blend into the community, just like Parmenter, with some green space, community space, interactive spaces, so that it's not, it's almost like a neighborhood police station and it's not seen as a police station. And we may be also using, we don't know yet, we may still use the current police station for some functions. We don't know yet. That's what's going to be taking place over the next 2 years. Alan's got the mic and then we'll go on.
Yeah. I'll be real brief.
They gave him the mic.
They did, that's dangerous. Thank you, Jamie. I'm Alan Earls, I live on Marvin Avenue. Four questions, I'll try to make them really fast. That's always my problem. My name's Alan Rose, I live on Marvin Avenue. A few things. The memorandum of understanding, that's not really legally binding, right? That could be changed at any time by the administration or by the town council or the school committee. And I'll race through these, you can answer them all. You said there's no formal support for this from the superintendent, but in effect, you're supporting the override because everything in the schools talks about the necessity for the override. One more thing, a town councilor who shall remain unnamed at a recent open meeting said, essentially, if you're older and can't afford Franklin, you should have a conversation with your family and talk about moving out. By passing this, doesn't that just accelerate the process? It makes it even more expensive for people. And lastly, can you contrast your calculations with the Vote No Franklin calculator on their website? Thank you.
Quickly, I've already responded to Mike Vieira with the Vote No, and I'm not going to validate, or I told him bluntly, I looked through it. There were a few mistakes at first gloss. I don't know if Mike's corrected them, but I can't validate or not validate, you know, an independent. And I will say, as Lucas knows, I've been getting deluged in the last 3 weeks with citizens that have taken it upon themselves, both pro and against, to do their own spreadsheets, their own math. And that's why it's important that people understand there's a budget already out there for everybody to review. People can go read the actual facts. If there's others out there that have a message within their spreadsheets that they want to convey, that's up to them and they can go do whatever they do. That is what it is. You know, I have nothing over that. But I don't personally, and I mean this respectfully, and I chipped in a little bit to Mike's spreadsheet, I don't have the time to literally go through every citizen's analysis of their own analysis of what they're doing. I've learned myself this in the last few weeks. I was trying at that a little bit at first. And then I just saw just too many people trying to figure out their own numbers and to figure out different things within the budget, so I can't confirm that. Alan, what was the first question you asked? Because that was mine.
Just, is the memorandum of understanding actionable? Yeah. Legally binding document or just general intent?
Right. So if you look at section 10 of the MOU, obviously barring any unforeseen circumstances, the MOU can change. It cannot just change, and I make that pledge myself. The council, the finance committee, and the school committee did vote in the affirmative on that. I think what we'll probably do is after yay or nay on an override, like I said in the fall, the summer and fall, you know, we'll work with the school administration and come back to make some assumptions about what it looks like in FY26 and try to do that. It's really a blueprint. It's really a guidance, right, document to try to say to the community, this is how we anticipate to spend all of those dollars, right? It is not technically a legally binding document from what, you know, it's not a Mass General law, it's not a town bylaw, it could change. But I think I've forecasted this enough where the number in the 60% with some other decisions that the schools have made will give solvency and sustainability to the schools, while also trying to speak to some of the other constituencies the council hears from about some of that. And again, if you look at that list that was up earlier, you know, we also have collective bargaining hanging around the corner. We all know everybody wants more investments in public infrastructure and in police and fire as well, with the capital program. So we're trying to balance things out a little bit as much as possible. I appreciate that.
What a sales pitch. What a sales pitch, Jamie.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask a question of Mr. Lucas.
Sure.
Did you ever take economics? Steve Sherlock tells me that you got a PhD. Did you ever take economics 101? Did you pass or have you failed with the budget work that you've been doing? Have you failed?
The answer is no. We haven't failed. I'm going to tell you exactly what drove this. Okay? What drove this largely is inflation certainly has impacted every budget across. But let me finish. If you look up the newspaper, school districts across the Commonwealth are struggling mightily financially. This is not the only community. Okay? There are overrides going around the state in eastern Massachusetts all over the place. Why? Because costs have exploded. And yes, that also includes labor. Because the school department, and I think everybody in eastern Massachusetts knows this, the heart and soul of every single community and why everyone moves here, lives here, and breathes here is for schools. 7 out of every $10 in the local budget right now goes towards public education, and that's why your kids and grandkids and other kids in the future have a huge competitive advantage in the global marketplace. This is a struggle that's coming from the pandemic, from a lot of tremendous of anxiety and whatever you want to call it, from cost increases, from people changing jobs. I could sit here for an hour and talk about this, but it's not a failure in economics, okay? I think you're aware of inflation, I hope. I think everyone in here is impacted by it.
You're a salesman and a half.
I'm not a salesman and a half.
You are.
I'm actually telling you the straight facts. So other than that, I don't want to engage in a big debate about your opinion, and I respect your opinion.
No, respect my opinion.
Yes, I do.
Because you're shutting me down.
What's the question?
The question is, did he fail in putting the project together with you, coordinating the whole effort?
No. Another question?
Next question?
And then second question part of it is,
sure.
Why are we spending $30,000 for a June 11th vote when we could have had, as Debbie Pellegrini suggested, a vote in November?
That was a decision made by the council, the arguments, both pro and, let me just finish. Like, that's your opinion, and I respect that opinion. I really do. Okay, some of us, by the way, including even myself, and these folks know that, not because of the cost, I had advocated for a November election as well. Different people in the community had different opinions on that matter. That's just the way it is. And eventually the decision was made by the council and the school committee to try to hold the election in June. If you're not in agreement with that, that's okay. I don't mind. Many of you may not be in agreement with the June election. That's okay. But the decision was made. We're going to make that decision next Tuesday and move on from that.
With all respect, you said, I'm not here to promote the vote, yes or no. And Lucas said the same thing. I'm not here to promote the yes or no. But everything I've heard since then is vote for it, vote for it, vote for it.
Neither of us have said any of those words. We're here to answer questions that people are brought to us.
Okay. We're going to try and take questions in the order they come in. So I see your hand up front. We're going to start right here.
Hi, my name is Kate. I'm just wondering, is there anywhere that I could look during the pandemic, when all the towns were getting all kinds of money, when the schools were shut down, where that money was allocated to?
Yes. So we have a I have on the municipal side, just so you're aware, and I'll let Lucas and Bob speak to the school side. We have reports out on the CARES Act money, and we have a report out on the ARPA. Because the ARPA funds, the American Rescue Plan Act funds that the town received, we'll be putting out a report later this summer. Just as our county allocation is going down, most of the money that was spent from the town was based on infrastructure. And it's very important to know the town, the municipal side, if you will, did not use any of their ARPA funds to plug any budget gaps. So it's just important for people to know that, okay? But eventually, there are reports already online. Up to a certain point, we just haven't recalibrated the report based on recent expenditures. But Barron Road has gotten repaved because of that. We've done a couple $1 million in water main replacements. We've done $1.5 million worth of stormwater. I'm just going right off the top of my head for some recent examples.
No, but I'm referring to the money that was allocated to the schools.
Oh,
because the schools
my bad. I apologize.
So with the ESSER funding, we can provide a report of how it was spent. During my time, ESSER 3 was the final grant since I've been superintendent, and we had positions. We had counselors in there. We had activity monitors, folks who work, interventionists who work with students. We noticed after the pandemic, we saw a drop in student performance. So we had interventionists that we funded through that money, which was one of the recommendations put forth to do that. Since then, what happened is that money's gone away, and some of the interventionists we've tried to incorporate into our budget, and including some of the counselors. It's not a decision that you take lightly, but when you're forced with a decision on the budgets that we've had and the budget that was appropriated last year, we made a decision to keep the school counselor in the school working with students as opposed to cutting it in order to try to get a solid one more year of trying to provide that level of support. But we can provide you more detail if you'd like, and I can make a note of that, and I can point you in the right direction.
Put it on the site?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
It's, I can orient you to it as well. It's in the budget books from previous years, but we can certainly do that.
Hi, my name is Wes. I've been Franklin 35 years in school with Union. By the way,
speak up, please.
You just got to speak loud.
Try again. My name is Wes. I've been Franklin 35 years. Somewhat of an unrelated question. I live at school in the Union, so I'm interested in what's happening in the status of the sale of the Davis Theater building. And if that gets sold to Dean, will they pay tax on it? Who gets the money?
Yeah, good question. So, one thing to demystify right now while I have the mic is Dean College does actually pay taxes right now. And they pay it on the McGurrow House building. Dr. Rooney in her tenure actually worked out agreements with my predecessor or myself that when they bought a residential house, they are paying the market rate taxes on those, and they are paying the taxes on the McGurrow House, on that building right there where the Bittersweet Cafe is. Birchwood. So they do pay that. The Davis there was just what's called an expression of interest put out. We did receive four proposals. They're non-binding. There was no bids. It was just conceptual ideas. Councilor Pellegrini over here chairs the Davis there reuse committee. They will be meeting next Monday. If folks want to find out about Davis there, come to the council chamber next Monday at 7 o'clock. That'll be the first meeting of probably two or three where the committee is going to make some recommendations back to the town council based on those concepts that have been brought in. I can't answer whether Dean College is going to buy it or whether they're not or what the council will do. There's really been mostly discussions around, is there a way to build a community arts center of sorts? And the other is really around housing.
Who gets the money?
The town. Well, it depends on how it's sold, but I won't go into the details. But the town gets the money for sure, as opposed to
schools, which is part of the town.
So, okay. Well, that's why I asked. So, by statute, when they sell that land, it cannot be used for any other purpose other than reinvesting in other land acquisitions or other property projects. So I can't just use that money from selling Davis there for any budget gaps at all. 100% can't do that. I also would never put the cart before the horse. It is far from a given, seriously, that the town would even sell the property. There are a lot of people that don't want it sold. So we're in for a year plus probably process on any of those final decisions. That's a great, great question.
Okay, Diane Forbes, I've lived here in town for 38 years. I have no children in the school system. I voted for every override that's come down the pike. To hold it like this close.
Oh, really?
It shuts up.
Okay, so I believe in the
a little closer.
System.
Like believe, really closer.
I believe
it is.
Okay.
Is
that it?
Yeah, there.
Got it. It's a little reverse.
Yep.
Push it, don't push the button. Okay, I've lived here 38 years. I have no children in the school system. I have lots of friends who have children in the school system. I've seen them leave the school system because things have been cut over the years. And I want to know what the dire reality is if we don't vote for this override in terms of 46 teachers being cut, what are the programs that are being cut, what is the price that individual families are going to have to pay for special arts or whatever, because if we don't support these kids, the individual families will have to. And also, please, the second question, is talk about any of the programs that are available for seniors or people in this town where they can get rebates or what is the word?
Abatements.
Abatements if they can't afford an override. Thank you.
I'll start. So individual employees are going to find out on Friday who's. So I say this. I'm going to get as detailed as possible. Without speaking about someone's job who hasn't been notified yet. Does that make sense, just to be clear? And the timing of it, I was someone who certainly was in support of the June override, because contractually, June 15th is when all employees need to be notified by that date of whether or not they're coming back. So that's what's one piece of it. We are also looking to have that solved so that we know either way, I'm not trying to sway anybody, but either way, we should know what we're working with in order to settle it. So we know what the town voted and approved for our budget. We've been working, how do we meet that number? And in order to meet that number, we are looking at upwards of 45 individuals across middle, elementary, high school, administration, curriculum support positions. We'll be closing, basically shutting our libraries down in schools. Our programs, some of the world language programs, art, music, are all impacted to a level that we have not seen. Looking at after school clubs, we've already seen the impact of none at the middle. Part of the ask was to bring those back. We're looking at additional clubs that will be reduced. We've decreased the school budgets by 25%. That's for stuff that you need, like your supplies, that anything you can think of when we went to school, like you know when you had books and supplies and stuff that we get for students. That we provide are gone. The other pieces you may have heard, if you're a parent, you would know, we did send out a notice to let people know based on conversations with the school committee and the policy subcommittee around the fee schedule. In order to offset the budget, we are no longer going to be supporting the athletic program within the operating budget. It will be strictly fee-based in that situation. That's not a threat or to be performative. That's trying to get to the number that we've been approved for on May 24th. So ultimately, fees are tiered. And basically, we've looked at the cost to have a season in X sport. What is the cost for the officials, the busing, coaches, and divide that amongst the number of students who participate in that sport. And then we tiered them into three tiers in order to show, you know, a cross-country team doesn't pay as much as a hockey team, right? Just based on the costs associated with those sports. So we put that information out in order to take it out of the operating for the purposes. Instituting a parking fee for the first time in Franklin for student drivers who would be at the school, including increases to the clubs and activities that we will run. So those are just some examples, but the only other thing I wanted to mention was the impact of this to the level of service and support that we offer kids. I'm here in front of you, and I can take the heat But my job is to really be advocating for the kids that we have to educate that walk through those doors. And we can agree or disagree, but you know, I'm here to answer every question I can, but I need you to know I would never, I'm paying a tax bill in this town too, and I want you to know that I take that seriously and I have a lot of empathy for what we're asking of folks. And what I will say to you is, please know, I want to be very clear. I'm not here to tell you how to vote. I'm advocating for what we have put out and what was approved by the school committee, which was more than the town, the pie's not big enough. The town's appropriated what they can within the budget, but it's less than what we had asked for. So I just don't want to conflate me telling you what to do on June 11th or not to do. It's more about me saying, in order to meet what we had originally asked for that came out of the school committee and what was approved, it would take the override for us to have that. But there will be impacts, and I'll kick it over to you, Jamie, but ultimately you're looking at about 45 staff that will be impacted, that will get letters across all levels and areas. And it's really gonna have an impact on the school and our ability to do the things that we do and what we all know kids love. And I know there are certain kids who love English, math, science, and social studies when you boil it down, but there are all those other things that we offer. You know, we used to have forensic science, kids that were looking to get into the police field. We met with the fire department in the fall to talk about, they're looking for help to hire students. So we talked about, wow, what if we had an EMT cert? So this is also about trying to invest in our community. When we consolidate to one middle school, we have Horace Mann, who does a little bit of work to partner with the senior center, but having one middle school on this on adjoining property with the high school, there's some added benefit and value to what we can do and partner together for the system. So I just would point to all those things. It's for the right reasons, and I'll kick it to you.
So the second part of the question was about citizen exemptions. So I know everybody's not gonna see this, but it's called citizen discounts and exemptions. So it's right on the town administrator's webpage. You go to the town council webpage. Councilor Pellegrini asked us to do this a few years ago during the pandemic. And some of you may know Anne-Marie Tracy, who's a mom in town and was involved in football and sports. She did this for us when she was employed for us. And it's a one-stop shop to every offering in town. So just an example, the Department of Public Works has a 20% discount for water and sewer bills. If you're income eligible, the Recreation Department, some of you may not take programs there, obviously, but maybe some of your family, friends, neighbors, or grandkids might. They offer 100% discount on some programs for income eligible folks. There's a lot of abatements in state law for those who are veterans or who are blind or disabled, a variety of other means. And there's links, I'm just going through a couple, but there are links on here, there are contact information on here that folks can go look. It's about a two-page brochure. I'm sure that Emily and Sarah, they even have copies out there at the desk. You can grab a hard copy on the way out. But there are some exemptions and discounts that people can do. The last part I would answer this individual's question is, the council is going through an analysis right now this year on all of the fees within the bylaw. Most don't impact average citizens. Usually it's like liquor licenses and, you know, building permits and conservation permits and all that stuff. But we are going to look at what we call our community assistance program. It's under that auspices. And I can, I don't know the percentage, but we are crunching some numbers to see if we can increase those exemption amounts up to 25%, 30%, or maybe higher. And that'll be a year away. So the council will take that up probably in early, late this year or early next year.
Joe Gilmore, I'm just gonna expand on the answer to that, and then you can jump in, okay? Just to give you some dollar amounts as far as the athletic fees. So most sports right now, with few exceptions, are $250 per sport, per student. Football, hockey, boys hockey and girls hockey will jump to $1,000 per student. Most of the other sports will jump to $600. And then those sports that are the least expensive, like golf and whatnot, will go to $350. So it's an increase for everyone. Additionally, I just wanted to mention one of the other fees that's going up is transportation. That will go from $360
to $500 per student without a cap on the family. So if you have a family of three, you're looking at $1,500 to transport. So I'm guessing a lot of you will get phone calls to start driving your grandchildren to school potentially. Maybe you could charge them a little less than the $500 and help out. And then just to, again, because I'm in the business end of it, and to give you some context, the 45 positions that Lucas is talking about amount to about $4 to $4.5 million. That's what we would need to cut out of the budget in the event that the override does not happen. Okay? So now back to you.
Yeah, Joe Gilmore. Nobody seems to be talking about where the funds is gonna come for Dry County.
The school? It's already been done. There was a debt exclusion
so
for
where
the.
Did they
there was a vote last year from the citizens voted, I think, 60-40 on the debt exclusion. Just so you know, it's just on the Franklin portion, of course.
Yeah. Well, how did that must have affected the school budget? Am I correct?
It doesn't, because the tax. First of all, the bond for the school won't hit until FY27, and you know we have that in our financial modeling. We've put it out before, but the what happens is with a debt exclusion, your taxes go up just on the duration of when that project borrowing is there. We try to do 20 years here in Franklin. A lot of things we try to do 10. Tri-County did a 30-year note, and so that tax increase will be shown. I do want to note that part of the reason for this approach, at least from my perspective and the council's perspective, I know no one's going to believe this, but it is true. Actually, the projects that the town of Franklin did in the early 2000s for Keller Sullivan and Horace Mann, the other schools, those projects have actually fallen off the budget. So in your tax rate is actually a sunset of that tax. You don't really see it clearly. It's hard because it's small. But the Tri-County project essentially took the same capacity that was there for the building projects in the Franklin Public Schools that had now been paid off fully.
I'm watching hands.
Oh. Okay. Nice job, Sarah.
Hi. I have a lot of questions, but I'll keep it. I just want to ask. I hear you say all the time, we need to stay within our budgets. We need to stay within our budgets. Well, I'm wondering, on the town end, not so much the school end, and then the school end, yes, too, on all the administrative positions, the newly created positions. It seems like our bureaucracy gets bigger and bigger and deeper and deeper. The state is doing the same thing. They are creating positions to help with the housing crisis. Well, we have plenty of already department heads, to handle these. We just need to utilize what we have. For your end,
yep.
Mr. Hallin.
Sure.
What have you been doing to stay within your budget on your administrative staff?
Yeah. So the most important thing that we've done to stay within our means is within Prop 2.5. Okay, our revenues, if you take the police department, fire department, DPW.
No, your office, sir.
Well.
Your immediate office.
Is this about the deputy town administrator?
No.
Because the town of, well, here it is. It's challenging, right? You look at the town of Millis of 7,000. They have an assistant town.
I don't want to look at other towns. Everybody's going through a lot right now. Everybody can't make ends meet. When you talk about the increases on the property tax, you're not adding the fees for the sewer. You're not adding the fees for the rainwater runoff, the stormwater. You're not adding the fees for any of those things that are going to be coming down the pike on top of this. And everybody thinks it's just $500. Well, when you're on a fixed income, you're paying market rent, and on top of that, you're paying all of these extra fees. $500, where am I getting it? Right now, I couldn't have heat for the rest of the winter. I can't even buy food on my budget. So how do we stay within our budget, sir?
I don't, to be honest with all of you, I don't know if there's an answer that I can really give in like a minute or two. I just want you to.
I can't hear you, I'm sorry.
there's really not an answer I can give you within a minute or two that can answer that kind of a comment. I would just say this. I just said that earlier. I'm not the one that's putting in stormwater feet. Well, you wanted me to answer, but you keep looking at me. So let me answer the question for everybody else in the room. I already told everybody, the stormwater fee, I don't like it either. I didn't want to do it. I'm not advocating for it. I didn't come in here with this idea of mine. It's a federal mandate from the federal government.
I'm not questioning those. I'm saying you're not asking the reason when you're talking about all of these other fees, okay? I know it's not personal to you, but it seems like we have a state rep that's wants to have more battery-operated things to be plugged in everywhere. And a green climate thing, then talk about what's going on here in the towns of the people. The same goes with the senator. I'm sorry. I've lost all trust and faith in elected and appointed public officials at this point in my life.
Sure. I understand. I do.
I'm sorry for getting upset.
That's okay.
But I can't
survive anymore.
I'm not alone. I just wanted to add one comment, too, just because I'm hearing a lot of things. We do have an hour here with, we call it the coffee hour with state and local officials. So if there's ever time, even outside of here, you have concerns, it's a space to come and talk to folks on a monthly basis that they're here. We also have a social worker, Raylene. She's amazing. So if you have concerns, and it's not directly related to this, but if you have other concerns about bills or assistance, fuel assistance, food stamps, any of that kind of stuff, she's more than happy to work with you. We can just schedule you an appointment. But that's the question.
Hi, I was just wondering, because I haven't heard, how much are we saving by closing the school? And where's that? Is that money been figured into your current budget? And also, I thought I heard we were going to close Kennedy, but I haven't heard any mention of that today. Thank you.
So it's a little bit premature to identify the cost savings that will result from the closure of the Parmenter and the repurposing of the Kennedy School. Ultimately, the plan is that as those schools are sunsetted as school buildings for the district, the savings that are realized once we go through the process that Jamie mentioned this summer, really looking at where are the economies of scale, what kind of savings are there on facilities, and that sort of thing. Those will go towards making sure that the budget moving forward is sustainable. So it would roll back into making sure that the budget is sustainable as we go, and we don't have to come back to you 5 years, 10 years for an override. Right?
What about Kennedy? Is Kennedy closing?
Yes, so just to be clear, because I appreciate the question, we've talked about Parmenter, but Kennedy is also part of that reconsolidation. So what we've done is, if you think about all of the schools that we have within town, we currently have 10 schools, if you count the high school, and the triplex we have here, which has an early childhood center, and it has a middle school and an elementary, right? Lincoln Street, middle, elementary, and currently at Washington Street, there's a middle and an elementary attached, correct? Then you have the two independent elementary schools, which happen to be our oldest within the district. You have Parmenter and Kennedy. One is 61 years old, one is 71. It's in the description. But basically, what we've done is, through reconsolidation, is taken the Lincoln Street complex, where Annie Sullivan and Helen Keller are, and the South complex, where Remington Middle School and Jefferson Elementary are, and made basically two K through five complexes. But within that, the left side of there's two schools connected, right? One side is your K to two entrance and school. The other side is a 3-5 school. So students and families get a K-5 experience in one building, okay? And right now we're determining where is that line to have equal distribution to the degree we can around who would drive and attend the North Elementary, for the sake of this description, and the South. Those two schools, Kennedy and Parmenter, become unoccupied. Kennedy becomes basically unoccupied, And one of the things that we plan to do with this usable life for the future is to repurpose, and we toured a neighboring town to look at creating tuition, creating revenue by offering a child care facility that's run by the Franklin Public Schools that generates income, generates revenue. We're trying to figure out ways to consolidate, right size fit our district, and put the number of students we need in each building, while also trying to come up with ways in which we can create some additional sustainability through a model like that. The last thing I'll mention is the middle schools would all be combined to be here. I mentioned it earlier around trying to create some partnership, but your 6th, 7th, and 8th graders would then leave the North and South elementaries and all be on this the neighboring property for 6, 7, and 8 at the current Horace Mann Oak Street. 6th graders will enter the Oak Street side. We're trying to create smaller communities within larger ones where we can. And then 7th and 8th graders would be in the Horace Mann side. High school would be 9 through 12 as it is on a shared property. We're also exploring what are ways in a stable budget can we look for other economies of scale around after school programs when you have a high school and a middle school connected. Are there ways? So that's where I think the question is a good one, but we're trying right now, my major focus is trying to solve this budget, and then obviously the outcome of next week will really determine which path we need to finish the schedule for kids at the high school level. If there are courses coming off, we have to redo the schedule and whatnot. If it's failed, if it's passed, we would continue with the schedule that's been built within the system. So I just, it's a long answer, but those are what will happen with those facilities. The last piece when we did tour, the neighboring town, Medway does this, they have their own child care. They also have, we have an early childhood program, right? We have a pre-K, and we have full day, and we have mornings and afternoons, and we tuition in, parents can tuition their students to be a part of it. We're struggling with some of the afternoon and morning slots because if you're a working parent, it's hard to figure out what will you do with your child for the first half of the day and then get them to a half day program. And then typically that's where we see extended family helping to assist with this. I know Dr. Dutch mentioned everyone's chipping in and tying in. We're looking to explore that same opportunity. If we have the ability to have parents drop a student off for the childhood part, is there a way that with the half day programming, whether it's in the morning or the afternoon, can they then transition into the half day pre-K program if there's a slot available? So we're trying to figure out ways to, right now our pre-K is expanded. They're into Horace Mann right now. They actually have classes outside of the pre-K, and we're looking for ways to try to set ourselves up for the future and create some sustainability within the budget and look for ways to do that. So it's a long explanation. That's online too, you can see.
You're almost there in the front. There's one, I know.
Can I ask you to speak to the prospect of school accreditations, both in the current state and if the override passes or fails?
Sure. Please. So we have a decennial, every 10 years, a high school has to go through an accreditation process. The acronym is NEASC. We've used it before, but it's the New England Accreditation of Schools and Colleges is basically what it stands for. They come in, they look at your staffing levels, they look at your curriculum, they look at what the kids are learning in each grade, right, and how is the progression of courses, and what are the pass rates, what are the academic rates, how are students being educated. So we go through that process. One piece that's come up, which right now we don't have, well, last year we had to cut the librarian position, so a library media specialist. And I know for some, if you know, we might have all different impressions of the value of a librarian. I think the digital literacy and what these kids are exposed to online and trying to help educate them in that realm, it's beyond just the benefit of books, which we don't want to lose sight of around what the value of a librarian is to the schools. By not having a librarian at the high school, we are in a warning stage where they say, hey, listen, you know, you're on warning, you will lose your accreditation when we come to visit, right? If you can't supply a librarian. And unfortunately, when we had to make cuts, we had to reduce, that was one of the positions. Our intention is to bring that back. It's part of the ask, was to say, we'd like to bring a librarian back to our high school. And in the cuts that we're experiencing, we're looking to, right now we have teacher assistants, they're called ESPs, educational, but they're like a para. I'm trying to use, everybody calls them something different. We have someone at a para level who's not a licensed librarian, but they cover the libraries in all of our schools right now. Phenomenal people who just love kids and do right and do story time at the elementary, do all the things that we probably think about when we think about school libraries. But ultimately, we're looking at, I don't know that we can, I think we're gonna have to shut the libraries down in some of our schools, which feels pretty rotten, you know, particularly in Franklin. But we're trying to meet the number, and we have to think about, you need a classroom teacher, you need 4 years of English. We're trying to think about needs-based and then build out from there. So I hope that answers a bit of the question, but it's around not having that position.
What's the impact of not being accredited? So we're in danger of losing accreditation, but I don't understand what's going to come back.
I'll let Dr. Dutch chime in, but I'll just say not having that accreditation, when kids graduate Franklin High, if they're leaving a high school that's not accredited, that could have an impact down the road on their candidacy to maybe go to a school where they're like, okay, they're at a high school that's not accredited. I don't say that as like a threat or throw out like a scare, that's not a scare tactic, and I'm certainly not in a performance, but that's one area I mentioned. I'll kick it over to Bobber.
The other potential impact is as you apply for grants at the state and federal level, they're looking for accreditation as well. There's this idea that you're able to provide a specific level of quality in your education if you're not accredited. The perception is you're not providing that, and therefore grantors of funds are less likely to provide you the resources when you apply for a grant.
Right here. Yep.
Hello, everyone. My name is Susan Rohrbach. I'm a relative newbie in town. I've lived here for 26 years. So my question or comment to Lucas is, I like the fact that you're trying to bring in revenue in town, such as the preschool daycare idea that you just brought up. Certainly, I didn't know that, so I think that's great that you're trying to look for other avenues to bring funds into the district. And so this is not so much of a question, I just wanted to acknowledge that. But also, I was on the school committee when we started implementing parent fees, and that was another mechanism to try to offset costs. And it's a terrible thing to do, to have to do. We added fees for busing, for athletics, et cetera. And now we're continuing to do that 17 years later, after the override in 2007. And now the fees are so exorbitant. I mean, you heard a gasp in the crowd, I think, when you said, I think, Bob, you said for three kids, it's how much? 1,100?
15.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's a really tough cost. And also, if you want your children to partake in sports, I mean, that adds to additional costs. So I know it's something you don't do lightly, but it's just, unfortunately, the nature of the beast. So thank you for everything that the two of you do.
I didn't forget you, Rick.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Forbes Minicelli. I went to Franklin High School. I'm now back in Franklin after being gone for about 30 or 40 years. And I am a school librarian, a retired school librarian. And one of my questions was about the having the schools be, and now I'm old, so I can't remember the word, accredited. Having the schools be accredited, because if you do not have a school librarian in the high school, your school is not accredited. And that affects when kids go to colleges. So colleges look whether the high school is accredited or not. And if we don't have a school librarian in the high school, it's gonna really impact the students. Now, I was an elementary school librarian, and I take a little offense to talking about that we just read stories to kids, because I taught K-4, I taught them how to evaluate websites, how to tell if a website was good or bad, how to use an index, how to use a table of contents. I taught them so much with information skills, and my granddaughter now goes to the Keller School, and she does not have a school librarian. and I volunteered in her school library, and it was basically just reading a story. Now, I think of all the skills that I taught those K-4 students, and now the kids in Franklin are not getting those skills, and it really makes me sad. Now, my granddaughter, she knows all about books, she knows all about authors, she knows all about indexes and table of contents, and she's 7 years old, and it's only because I teach her that. But the other kids, I feel so bad for because they are not getting that without a school librarian in the elementary schools. And that's my soapbox. But my main concern is the accreditation of the high school. And without the override, that's going to be an issue. Thank you.
Going Chestnut Street. Couple of things. Louder, Rick. A couple of things trouble me the most. Mr. Helen, you said we knew this 10 years ago that this was coming. And for 10 years, all we did was add folks, add staff, and continue to spend more and more money. Sooner or later, we were going to have to pay the piper. Now we have to pay the piper. And then I could go on, and I don't want to because these people, I don't want to blow these people up, but I followed the council religiously from Paul Schumer, Jamie at Austin, to Wolfgang Bauer, to Mr. Collins from South, and we ran back to the South because we knew nothing about it, to Wolfgang, to Jeff, to you. What troubles me today, hearing what I heard today, was it appears to me that you folks knew all along that Parmenter was going to be the new fire station, police station, excuse me. And yet, we had a building reuse committee meetings with Deb and her group. Thank you. And I brought 7 either former employees, dedicated 60 to 70 year old ex-Franklin people lived here forever, generations. We sat through that meeting, try to talk sense or at least consideration into using the Davis Stair, which we is, if you look at geographically, it's dead center in of our community. It's 4 floors. It could have given them a gun range. There's almost 4 acres there, but apparently now we need 21 for a fire police station when we have one on a postage stamp one that served us well for 30 years. But it's Franklin, I get it. Everybody wants the best. We think we're Wellesley and we'll continue to go that route. All I'm asking for in this town is some fiscal conservatism. I don't see it. I don't see it from your department, Mr. Helen. I hate to make it sound like I'm against these children. I am not. However, they are caught in this crossfire because you, I think, and folks like you, spend more money than we give you every year, Jamie. Can you tell me how many revolving accounts we have now?
I think about 6.
Okay, it's how much does each one of those accounts have in it?
There's a maximum. They just voted on them last week. And in my 9 years in Franklin, those amounts haven't gone up. 3 of those 6 or 7 are senior center related. A couple are police for asset forfeiture. So I think we've only got about 6 or 7, maybe.
How much money in them, sir?
Maybe no more than a few hundred thousand, Rick.
We don't have any revolving accounts with $1 million behind them?
No.
None.
0. I think what you're talking about are stabilization accounts.
So the only stabilization money, the only money we have is a 6-point-something in stabilization that we use to bond our...
That's right. The stabilization accounts are used for the bond rating, which saves the town money when it goes out to borrow and on interest rates. And for the fiscal management folks in the room, yeah, that's right. It's something we're pretty proud of. We have clean and glistening audits. Councilor Pellegrini knows this. Every May, we have our auditors come in and give a presentation. We do manage money extraordinarily well in Franklin, and we went from a AA bond rating to a AAA because of many factors, including the savings that we have in the account, including in the stabilization account, and because the voters decided to vote in the Community Preservation Act and a variety of other metrics, Rick. But Look, I understand there's no easy way.
Thank you. I thought I had the floor for a second.
Oh, you asked a couple questions, so I thought you wanted answers.
I've heard these answers many times.
Gotcha.
Did you know when the police station was going to bomb it when we, as townspeople, came and suggested Davis there? Because it sounds like from your MOU and from the fact that you've already got a committee together, which I saw on TV 2 weeks ago, speaking to the fact that we're going to put it on 21 acres in Palmetto.
So, Rick,
why did you bother to tell us that there may be a chance, like North Attleboro, to put our police station in a building that we already own and was viable? But no, you didn't tell us that, sir. You just, it was a cut and switch.
It wasn't a cut and switch at all, Rick, and you know that because I know for a fact, actually.
Don't say I know what I
know. No, you do, because you've one of been the few citizens who showed up at all of the Davis Thayer meetings when we had those meetings with Council of Play, we had this first view, and you came to those meetings asking the architects and engineers with the facilities department, let me finish, if Davis Thayer was a suitable building for the police station.
But your
and they all told you it wasn't.
But just, sir, your mind was made up prior to that.
It was not made up prior to that, Rick.
It was most certainly, or you wouldn't have been able to put these committees together on those engineers that you had there last week.
Rick, it's no secret. I'm just for the rest of the audience. Number one, we don't need 20 acres for the police station. Okay, I already explained that to everybody. We need about 5 or 6. And yes, Rick, you are correct. At the end of the day, I know the land parcels in town pretty darn well. Just like my predecessor, I spend a half hour a day looking around GIS maps, because that's what I do, trying to see where available land is and try to see where the development is happening, where the easements are, because I've been looking for years. Now, we're still, as part of the process with the OPM for the police station, gonna do an analysis to make sure there aren't better parcels out there. But in order to protect the town from having to go spend an exorbitant amount of money on a police station parcel, I know you roll your eyes, but at the end of the day, Rick, the Davis Thayer parcel is not going to likely work, okay? The building will have to be, the building.
There's a perfectly good building.
Very much the same.
Which one?
In North Attleboro Center. And those same engineers that are looking at ours did that building.
Rick, you've been to the meetings. Like, they've declared Davis, you, as well as much as probably anyone, have been to so many meetings on these issues. You know the reports we've done on Davis Thayer for decades. The building is not suitable for a police station. Like,
committee, Jamie. We shouldn't even bother to have the committee.
I don't,
because you had already made up your mind. And I'm friends with all four ex-police chiefs. All four. They either lived near me or their friends or went to school with them. And one of them told the seven of us, don't even bother to do what you're doing.
Because they've already made their mind
up at the town hall. It's going to be Palmetto. So that's,
I guess, Rick, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to do is deal with a lot of constituencies in town and handle them to try to solve problems the community has. If for some reason you find it a negative that the town identified some parcels that may be good candidates for a police station, I'm sorry for trying to do my job. Like, I really am. I know that you and I don't agree on this, but this forum is not really the place to be bringing out all this stuff about where the police station goes. I'm sure you're going to show up at all the police station building committee meetings. We welcome you. We welcome everyone here to those committee meetings. You can see the design process. You can ask questions about why we need this or why we need that. The Davis Thayer structure that is there now is not suitable for a police station. Sorry, Rick. Next question. Does anybody have another question? Jackie?
Can you hear me now?
Always.
Okay, my question has to deal with that slide that's up there. I think it's the maintaining staff level, staffing at current levels, and then the one below it, okay, the K-5 class, that adds up to what?
Just under 2.5 million.
Okay, 2.5 million, that's a nice, easy number. The school budget book, okay, had all the numbers about their dream staffing and teachers, okay? That means that the number of teachers they wanted to add throughout the school system, while we have a drop in enrollment, I believe total 19. The number of staff positions they wanted to add was 31.6 plus, and this is what that lady who left was upset about, they wanted to add another administrator position of 1.2 people. Okay, so now the superintendent alluded to the fact that if the override fails, you said there was 46 teachers were going to be let go. That's a swing of 75. With what you want in your wish list versus what's going to disappear if this doesn't pass, that doesn't make sense. Is the school department that much in the red that they can't find the monies for 45 teachers, or is that teachers and staff? Or how many people from the central office, which is what this person's point was, how many people in the central office above the town and the school system are gonna have their jobs lost? And we all know that somebody who's been examining the books, Jane, that not this year, this present year, huge percentages of increases in salaries were handed out. I mean, we're talking $12,000, $10,000 and more. It's all on Facebook pages if people go look. But those are huge increases. I know from prior talks with Jamie, he always mentioned that, 2.5% is pretty much, or 2% is not a bad raise. And prior to Lucas becoming the superintendent, he was an assistant with that lovely superintendent, Dr. O'Hearn. And she probably orchestrated it, but he was part of that team. Our town gave out without even a teacher going to a picket line or protesting. And we heard about Andover and some other towns marching on strike for 14 days in the winter to get 12, 14%. They just handed 4% raises for 4 years. A 4% raise for 3 consecutive years to our teachers. Do you know what the top teachers can make in this town? Do you people know? Next year, the first year newbie right out of college, step one, $53,428. It's not too bad. Top teacher, okay, 15 years in the system with 60 hours beyond their master's degree or a doctorate, $112,782. So, you're kind of want this override because you're going to be in trouble next year because they don't want more money. And I'm sorry, as far as I'm concerned, they need to manage their money too. That's an obscene amount of money for teachers. Especially some of them that are, they need two or three assistants, aides, and all that stuff in their classroom. I taught for 30 years. You know how many aides I had in 30 years? Zero. Maybe these teachers are all snowflakes. Because they're that generation.
Jackie.
But that's my problem.
Do you have a okay. Correct guy?
Anyone else?
I'll just make a shout out. I'm grumpy, but I really appreciate the quality of your presentation and answering the questions.
Yes, thank you.
You're not that grumpy, Alan. I don't.
I'm pretty grumpy.
I just, thanks everybody for hanging in there. We, I think Lucas, myself, Bob, the school committee, the council, everybody understands how tense and anxious and divisive and differing opinions that people could have. I just thank everybody for their attendance and sticking with us for a couple hours. Patty, thanks for not heckling me. Alan, you're not grumpy. Thank you very much for all the great questions. Yeah. Thank you very much, everybody. And if anybody has any further questions or comments, You know, myself, Lucas, our staff, I know all the school committee members, the counselors are all available for anybody to call us or email us, or just stop in the office like many of you do. So thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.